Good morning and welcome to this very special Sunday celebration of Earth, our common home, the space that we as humans share with all beings. This morning, we're going to begin with Earthrise, a tribute from the Youth Poet Laureate of the United States, Amanda Gorman.
On Christmas Eve, 1968, astronaut Bill Anders snapped a photo of the Earth as Apollo 8 orbited the moon. Those three guys were surprised to see from their eyes a planet looked like an Earthrise, a blue orb hovering over the moon's gray horizon with deep oceans and silver skies. It was a world's first glance at itself, a first chance to see a shared reality, a declared stance and a commonality, a glimpse into a planet's mirror, and as such drew nearer, our own urgency became clear as we realized that we hold nothing dearer than this floating body we all call home. We've known that we're caught in the throes of climactic change, and some say we'll just go away, while some simply pray to survive another day. For it is the obscure, the oppressed, the poor, who once the disaster declared done, still suffer more than anyone. Climate change is the single greatest challenge of our time. Of this, you're certainly aware. It's saddening, but I cannot spare you from knowing an inconvenient fact, because it's getting the facts straight that gets us to act and not to wait. So I tell you this not to scare you, but to prepare you, to dare you to dream a different reality, where despite disparities, we all care to protect this world, this little blue marvel, this little true marvel, to master the verve and the nerve to see how we can serve our planet. You don't need to be a politician to make it your mission to conserve, to protect, to preserve that one and only home that is ours. To use your unique power to give next generations the planet they deserve. We are demonstrating, creating, advocating to heed this inconvenient truth, because we need to be anything but lenient to the future of our youth. And while this is a training and sustaining the future of our planet, there is no rehearsal. The time is now, 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 because the reversal of harm and protection of a future so universal to be anything but controversial. So, Earth, pale blue dots, we will fail you not, just as we chose to go to the moon. We know it's never too soon to choose hope. We choose to do more than cope with climate change. We choose to end it. We refuse to lose. We do this and more, not because it's very easy or nice, but because it is necessary. Because at every dawn we carry the weight of the face of this celestial body orbiting a star, and as heavy as the weight sounded, it doesn't hold us down, but it keeps us grounded, steady, ready, because an environmental movement of this size is simply another form of an Earthrise. To see it, close your eyes, visualize that all of us in this room and outside of these walls or in these halls, all of us change makers are in a spacecraft floating like a silver raft in space, and we see the face of a planet anew. We relish the view, we witness its round green and brilliant blue, which inspires us to ask deeply, wholly, what can we do? Open your eyes, know the future of this wise planet is right in sight. Rights in all of us, trust this Earth uprising, all of us, bring light, exciting solutions never tried before, for it is a hope that implores us at our uncompromising core to keep rising up for an Earth more than worth fighting for.
Good morning again, and welcome to the West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship Virtual Sunday Service. We are also affectionately known as WUF, and we sometimes refer to our congregants as WUFers. My name is Salima Mawson, and I use the pronouns she and her. It is my privilege to be part of this morning's service and to welcome you, whoever, wherever, and however you are at this moment. Please know that you are welcome here, whatever your age or abilities, the color of your skin or where you were born, whomever you love or how you identify your gender, whatever your spiritual practices may be, or if you have none, know that we are grateful to have you with us. As we honor and celebrate Earth Day, we especially want to remember the original peoples who first stewarded this land that we have come to think of as ours. The Chinook, Powhatan, Multnomah, Umatilla, Grand Ronde, and Yurok tribes. These are some of the Northwest Salmon people, whose descendants we welcome today as neighbors and colleagues. I encourage you to check the announcements in your order of service to see what else is happening this week, and especially to join us for our first meeting of Compassion for Earth Exchange on Tuesday. Today, following our service at 11:30, in place of our usual coffee hour, there will be a second budget forum. Now, if this is your first time with us and you don't have an order of service but would like to know more about who we are and how we stay connected during this time of social distancing, don't hesitate to get in touch with our congregational administrator through our website, whuuf.org. As Unitarian Universalists, we begin our time together with the lighting of our chalice, a simple ritual accompanied by simple words that draws us all into an ever-expanding circle of compassionate community. Whether or not you are lighting a chalice where you are, please join me. In speaking together our opening affirmation. Let us open our eyes to see what is beautiful. Let us open our minds to learn what is true. Let us open our hearts to love one another.
Thank you. I'm Jane. I'm finishing sophomore year in high school, and these are Greta Thunberg's closing remarks to world business leaders in 2019. Right now, more than ever, we are desperate for hope. But what is hope? For me, hope is not more empty assurances that everything will be all right, that things are being taken care of, and we do not need to worry. For me, hope is the feeling that keeps you going, even though all odds may be against you. For me, hope comes from action, not just words. For me, hope is telling it like it is, no matter how difficult or uncomfortable that may be. And again, I'm not here to tell you what to do. After all, safeguarding the future living conditions and preserving life on Earth as we know it is voluntary. The choice is yours to make. But I can assure you this. You can't negotiate with physics, and your children and grandchildren will hold you accountable for the choices you make. How's that for a deal?
Hi, friends. Welcome to Storytime with Tristan. Join me today as we read We Are Water Protectors by Carol Lindstrom and illustrated by Michaela Goad. Water is the first medicine, Nokomis told me. So this word Nokomis is the Ojibwe word for grandmother. So this must be her grandmother. We come from water. It nourished us inside our mother's body, and it nourishes us here on Mother Earth. Water is sacred, she said. We stand with our songs and our drums. We are still here. The river's rhythm runs through my veins, runs through my people's veins. My people talk of a black snake that will destroy the land. Spoil the water, poison plants and animals, wreck everything in its path. So this must be the black snake that she's talking about, and this looks like some kind of pipe going through the water that's causing some pollution. When my people first spoke of the black snake, they foretold that it wouldn't come for many, many years. Now the black snake is here. Its venom burns the land, courses through the water, making it unfit to drink. There's some kind of pipe that she's imagining as a snake that's causing the water to be dirty or unclean. Take courage. I must keep the black snake away from my village's water. I must rally my people together to stand for the water, to stand for the land, to stand as one against the black snake. We stand with our songs and our drums. We are still here. It will not be easy. We fight for those who cannot fight for themselves, the winged ones, the crawling ones, the birds and all the other animals and insects that need the land. The four-legged, the two-legged, the plants, trees, rivers, lakes. The earth. We are all related. Tears like waterfalls stream down, tracks down my face, tracks down my people's face. Water has its own spirit. Nokomis told me. Water is alive. Water remembers our ancestors who came before us, she said. We stand with our songs and our drums. We are still here. We are stewards of the earth. Our spirits have not been broken. We are water protectors. We stand. The black snake is in for the fight of its life. And then at the end, the author gives us more information here on water protectors, if you want to learn about how to be a water protector. And a glossary here to tell you some of the words, and an illustrator's note as well. And then at the very end, we have the Earth Steward and Water Protector Pledge. I will do my best to honor Mother Earth and all its living beings, including the water and land. I will always remember to treat the earth as I would like to be treated. I will treat the winged ones, the crawling ones, the four-legged, the two-legged, the plants, trees, rivers, lakes, the earth, with kindness and respect. I pledge to make this world a better place by being a steward of the earth and a protector of the water. The end. I love how this story showed us many brave people who were willing to stand and protect their water, along with the land and animals that depend on the water. Are you wondering how you can help protect the water? One thing we can do is to make sure we are not wasting water by letting it run from the sink when we're brushing our teeth or taking a really long shower. Another thing we can do is to recycle and make sure to not litter. We can pick up trash that we see so that the trash doesn't end up in our water. It's up to us to take care of our earth. I hope you enjoyed our story today, and I hope you will join me in being a water protector. Special thanks to Carol Lindstrom and Roaring Brook Press for granting permission to read aloud, We Are Water Protectors. Make sure to get your own copy of this book so you can add it to your library. Thanks for joining me on Storytime with Tristan.
Now is the time in our service when we take some moments for reflection, meditation, or prayer, as you may wish.
Hello and welcome. I'm Jean Trickstead, and today we're here to celebrate Earth Day. And truly it's a day to celebrate the all living creatures who inhabit this beautiful blue orb. Scientists tell us that the Earth was created 4.5 billion years ago. And we entered about 400,000 years ago. We, my friends, have inherited 4 billion years of symbiotic cooperation among millions of living organisms. For hundreds of thousands of years, our ancestors lived deeply with nature. They spent their days observing the seasons, the behaviors of animals and plants, and through these observations, they became knowledgeable, and their intelligence improved, and the life that they led on a daily basis improved. About 300 years ago, our Western culture developed the philosophy of man over nature. And this belief system says that since man has superior intelligence to other living beings, that man held dominance over them and could acquire to abundance clean air and water and animals and fish and plants and minerals and rocks and fossil fuels. What we've come to learn today is that we've taken too much. If we're to survive as a species, we must change what we do, and we must change our story. We must shift our mythology to imagine a future where both humans and nature flourish. In order to do that, we have to shift our beliefs and our values. This time, when we write our story, let's include everyone in that story. Let's include the black and the brown and the indigenous people, those people most affected by pollution and other aspects of climate change. Let's change the narrative that some lives matter more than other lives. Today we heard a children's story about the evil black snake and the heroic water protectors, a story that's so powerful that it united tribes. It brought people from all races and all walks of life from all over the world to help Standing Rock defend the right to clean water and air. Indigenous people hold the world view that we care for the earth And if we care for the earth, it cares for us. That we take what we need and we leave the rest. We leave the rest of the plant. We leave part of the forest so that nature may replenish its fertility. I call upon us in this time of ecological crisis to consciously recreate a way of life, much like that life our ancestors led, of course, in this modern world. But let's take the principles and the values that they so carefully cultivated and continue to cultivate today. Because the earth requires us, our survival requires us to restore nature's beauty and resiliency. So I would like to invite you to join with Compassion for the Earth Exchange. This is a group who will, together we will learn and act with hope and enthusiasm for a future in which humans and all living beings flourish. So join us this coming Tuesday at 5 o'clock via Zoom, and we'll see what we can come up with. Thank you. So in the next few minutes, you're going to listen to stories from fellow woofers about their connections to nature. So sit back and enjoy these wonderful stories.
Several years ago, I really started to notice trees. I've lived here since 2012, but for some reason, at that time, the trees became inhabitants of my world rather than background. We who live in this land of eternal green, even in our driest times so far, can sometimes ignore the tunnels of trees or the towering neighbors that give texture to our environment, shade us, or give voice to the wind by bouncing it off their leaves. I began really seeing and literally feeling them, which made them even more real. So when I went looking for a new book and saw The Overstory by Richard Powers, with the giant tree trunks on the cover and title about the world of trees above us, I grabbed it up. To me, the book is about the lives of humans interwoven with trees. The first 8 chapters introduce us to people across various times in various parts of the world. With each one, trees of amazing depth of character, complexity, and grace are woven into the lives of these people. We learn of the biologic intricacies, ingenious mechanisms, and the hidden lives of these creatures. The lives of humans and trees sometimes literally wrap themselves together, as when a banyan tree saves a falling American soldier in Vietnam. Sometimes, humans are observers of these otherworldly beings, as when generations of a farm family in Iowa document a lone chestnut tree that survived a decimating plague. At other times, the opposite is true, as the trees seem to be steadfast and omnipresent during the riches and the tragedies of human life. As the years pass and the abbreviated lifespan that we humans occupy compared to our wooded companions. The second part of the book sees a partial convergence of some of these characters in the same place at the same time, as they get wrapped up in the tug of war between the value for the natural world versus the value for the human world, and humanity's terminal failure to perceive that they really are the same things. We start to hear of the tree of life and are introduced to the idea that something larger than humanity, trees, or even nature, is in motion, while we humans continue to maintain our superiority. The book leads us to a horizon that will inevitably contain loss and suffering. And though we cannot see over that horizon, what will come after will be some new recreation and rebirth of that which has existed since this planet came to be and will exist until its end.
Happy Earth Day. I'm Felicity Shoulders, WWF's unofficial climate victory garden booster. Today and every day, I would like to challenge you to be a beaver.
In European-American traditions, beaver is a symbol of industry, busy as a beaver. But I'm not asking you to work as hard as they do, or as obsessively. We've known since the 1960s that beavers are instinctively driven to build a dam wherever they hear the sound of running water. That kind of driven compulsion is not what I'm advocating. Instead, I want to talk about the ecological understanding of the beaver. The beaver is not just a busy creature building itself a home. It's an engineer of landscape. To some extent, this is also an indigenous understanding. The Yakima people tell that the Columbia River was created when their version of coyote, Spiligy, fought with a giant evil beaver named Wishpoosh, who was ravenous and insatiable and lived in the Great Lake. Their fight was so epic and destructive, it destroyed the lake, created the Yakima River Canyon, and the Columbia Gorge. Versions of this story from other Northwest nations say a giant beaver made the gorge by dragging his tail. Either way, it bears a real resemblance to the geological understanding of our region's history, shaped and reshaped by the disastrous failure of the glacial dam that held the Great Lake we now call Lake Missoula. Beavers remind us of ourselves, their mannerisms, the way they rub their bellies with their hands, their building. Like Wishpoosh, they can seem rapacious, greedy for all the trees to hold back all the water we want for ourselves. Humans can also see ourselves in that. Colonialist fur companies did all they could to strip the beavers from this country, ravenous for their beautiful, useful pelts. But today we understand beavers' place in healthy ecosystems. The Yakima tribe is one of the partners in a program to catch beavers reported as nuisances by humans and release them in critical parts of the Yakima River watershed, the very river system created long ago by Wishpoosh. There's a geological principle. The greater the flow, the larger the particles it carries. In rocks, we can read this evidence in particle sorting by size. In the living landscape, we see this in erosion, the often disastrous loss of soil to gravity and water. Soil loss is one of the great perils of climate change, and beavers are our guardians against it. When they hear running water and react immediately to damaged flow, beavers are stopping the fastest stream, the streams carrying the most earth away from the land. They mitigate the risks of flood by diffusing the energy of high water across more territory. They create lazy meanders, little ponds, wet places. They create water margins. There's a permaculture principle, value the margins. The margins are where ecological niches abound and multiply, where life finds opportunities and growth. A straight stream carries wealth away from the land. A meandering creek offers it to newts, to red-winged blackbirds, to little fish hiding in the shadowed nooks under the beaver's old branches. In some places, beavers once hunted out are now being reintroduced. But in Western America, we have never completely lost our beavers, the symbol on Oregon's state flag that was once a boast of settler colonialist wealth, our extractable natural resources. And in Alaska, where the glaciers are melting, the slowest but grandest of flows carrying the soil wealth of millennia, lost in slow-motion ice, silt and clays fine and abundant, ready to be picked up by a rivulet and dumped uselessly into the sea. The beavers are already at work, unbidden. They picked up and moved north, slowing streams of runoff moving over ground that is no longer permanently frozen. They've introduced themselves. So when you think what you can do for the earth, think of being a beaver. I do mean this broadly. How can you create homes, niches, margins for other creatures? How can you act locally in ways that make your ecosystem more resilient and better for all the creatures around you? How can you do that without waiting for anyone to say so? But I also mean it very literally. How can you hold water on the land, evening out the flood times and the drought times? How can you prevent erosion, letting the teeming life and healthy soil lock inches and feet of carbon into a living, thriving cycle? When you hear that the glaciers are melting, that the fires are starting, how can you hear that not as the trump of doom, but as the sound of running water, maddeningly running water, that makes you sharpen your front teeth and start building something new?
Good morning. My name is Don Merrick. I'm grateful to have been asked to participate this morning. I've been a member of WOLF and World Social Justice for 24 years. During my career as an engineer, I had the benefit of working on environmental issues. During my retirement years, I've worked as an activist and advocate for environmental and climate issues. My intention is to provide you with ways to influence legislation associated with the climate crisis. I'll address the authority of the United Nations, bestowed democratically by member states. I'll address why now is an opportune time to act. I'll address the influence of banks funding fossil fuel use. And lastly, I'll address impending legislation at the federal level and in Oregon. Because of my limited time, I've made generous use of a resource page to elaborate on these concerns and provide links useful for you to advocate. The resource page will be provided by the Wolf Administration. There is no credible science to refute the existence of our climate crisis. The crisis is caused by the release of greenhouse gases. The ultimate authorities for this massive undertaking are two United Nations agencies. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change for assessments and recommendation, and secondly, the Framework Committee on Climate Change to direct nation states in aggressive and enforceable goals. The IPCC was formed and chartered in 1988 to issue assessment reports every 5 years. The FCCC was formed in 1993 after the successful Rio World Summit on Climate Control and charged with deploying effective goals and solutions. Distinguished experts worldwide provide their studies to these authorities. Benefits from their results are shared among all nations. With the Democratic Party in lead position, the U.S. has a unique opportunity to address the climate crisis. Two-thirds of Americans think the government should do more on climate. The Biden administration released the American Jobs Plan on March 31st, calling for a $2 trillion investment in infrastructure. Issues related to climate include support of our electrical grid and renewable energy. It also proposes saving money by ending the federal tax breaks for fossil fuel companies and putting teeth in the enforcement of tax laws against corporations who have skated without paying taxes in the past. I ask you to tell your member of Congress to support Biden's plan to get us to a 100% carbon-free electrical grid by 2035. The world's 60 largest banks have given $3.8 trillion to fossil fuel companies. Just since the Paris Agreement was signed in 2016, public outrage is encouraging shareholders to eliminate the support. In Oregon, a campaign sponsored by the Just Transition Alliance and other frontline climate and environmental justice groups highlights three bills winding their way through the legislative process. I speak to these in the resource page. I ask you to review them and have your representatives support them. Our success in the next few years will determine what kind of world we leave our children and grandchildren. Thank you.
I'm Jane, and I was asked to do a piece on outdoor school. For me, outdoor school was a good educational experience because it showed me things that I could not necessarily learn in the classroom. My friends and I were outside probably around 10 hours a day, interacting with nature and learning about plants, trees, animals, habitats, and man-made inventions. We hiked for miles in the sun and the rain and the cold and the warmth. My friends and I were able to see in real life what schools could only show us in pictures and videos, such as crabs, fish, deer, birds, and bugs. Something that was also good about outdoor school was that, as well as it being social and good for bonding, it was also a very kinesthetic learning environment. I think that outdoor school is a good experience because it opens your eyes to issues that surround the world and nature. Animals are dying and being impacted from climate change, and that's why we need to act. People are doing these things that they aren't even necessarily aware of, and entire ecosystems are being impacted. Animals and creatures are losing their homes, their food sources, their nutrients, and the things that they need to survive. It's important that we keep ecosystems alive, because as much as we depend on them, they depend on us. They especially depend on us not to kill them. In outdoor school, we learned about protecting the environment, such as reducing our carbon footprint, recycling, cleaning up trash, and specific things, such as cutting open the plastic tops over 6-pack cans. There were lots of things that were talked about, including protecting estuaries, because they're important for many aquatic creatures in their life cycle. Outdoor school taught us about not polluting as well. Oil and chemicals that get into the rivers, the streams, and eventually into the ocean are killing and harming animals. I'm sure that we've all seen photos of little ducks or snakes covered in tar and unable to move. A lot of that is the pollution and waste that we dump into the waterways. They're killing the animals, and they're making them sick, and then also polluting the food sources as well. As a society, we need to make sure we're all doing our part to try and keep the Earth a good place. We're already so far behind. We're on the edge of not being able to reverse the effects of climate change. Outdoor school has taught me a lot about what's important to keep alive, and that's why we all need to do our part.
Hi, I'm Suzanne Riles, the grounds chair. I'm going to talk to you about grounds therapy. It's been a pandemic year, and even though I am fully vaccinated now, I still sometimes need to escape. My mother died this year too, though not of COVID. When my sadness about all the death or my frustration piles up, I am so grateful for the therapy I'm getting off by myself in the Wolf Grounds, our sacred grove. At times like this, I grab my yellow boots and gardening gloves and run over to our 2.7 acres of tall old Douglas fir trees at church, infested with blackberry and ivy. As in Jack London's story of The Call of the Wild, where the sled dogs just love to pull, I pitch in happily with shovel and bucket to chase and unearth the dark roots of vines in the softened dirt. And as I dig and work the roots free, my mind can wander. At first, the racket of indoor concerns pesters my thoughts, schedules and appointments and travel plans. Gradually, the books I'm reading speak up, lately about racism and Shakespeare's son Hamlet and great bird migrations. As I hit my stride, my mind clears and peace descends. The other afternoon, a stiff wind played whooshing and whispering tones in the Douglas firs high overhead as the sun went down, casting long shadows to the sound of great trees. As I rested my back by standing arched to gaze upward, a pair of pileated woodpeckers hammered a tree nearby, then noticed the company and flew off. Taking a break, I wandered to the corner where the preschool has built a large, magical, multi-chambered fort on stumps covered with fallen fir branches. When the school is in session, piping little preschool voices echo around like birds. There is a Pacific yew tree up near the south fence that one of our old-timers planted years ago. I love to pick fallen leaves from its evergreen limbs, a sort of grooming, and absorb its healing spirit. The breast cancer drug Taxol is made from yew trees. Because it lacks a central leader, the yew seems to dance, its open branches held loose and wide with the trees around it by legions of protective Oregon grapes. Nearby is a special meditation place at a big cherry stump where you can write messages on stones. Everywhere I go, I see how much the other grounds volunteers, too, have accomplished. Digging out vines, picking up down wood, maintaining our drainage soils, planting new shrubs, and so much more. After 2 or 3 hours, I am usually ready for home again, pleasantly tired out and grubby. I will hose off my yellow boots and tuck them back into the closet, ready for my next dream time at work in our little land of tall dollar stores.
So thank you, everybody, for your wonderful compositions. And I remind us that they were all original works, all original thoughts. Thank you so much. I think these stories remind us of how much we have in common with nature, how the beaver builds a home and cares for its family, how mature trees nurture their offspring and share food and water and medicine with other species of trees and other organisms. That in our heart, we sense that we belong to the earth, and now more than ever, that the earth needs us. I'd like to share a letter that I came across at the Columbia Trust, it's Columbia Land Trust website, and it's entitled, To My Daughter, Olivia. It was posted by Deanne Ramirez on November 25th, 2018. You were born on a misty November morning when clouds flowed through and around the tall firs. When you read this letter, I hope you're looking out a window at the same scene, because that would mean that the efforts, the phone calls, the letters to our representatives, the marches, and the tree plantings we have done have helped heal, conserve, and honor the land that nourishes us. I hope you are here among the western cedars, the Douglas firs, alders, the coho, and chinook. Aristotle wrote, Nature does nothing without purpose or uselessly. And I hope you have absorbed into your beautiful body his wise words and understand that the earth needs you as much as you need the earth. On this day in the future, I hope all people that have seen the Columbia River understand that they are connected to each other and all the plants and animals who chose to live on its banks and on the banks of the Hood, the Rogue, the Umpqua, the Iowa, the Skagit, the Noosac, the Klamath, the Smith, the Snake, the Colorado, and all rivers east and west of the mighty Mississippi. We are one circling the sun. I hope in your time compassion has won over cruelty and our love of home sustains us. If you act from hope, as this mother certainly does, you understand that you are something, part of something bigger than yourself, that you work for a future that you will never see. That you see yourself as part of an expanding and contracting future that celebrates and collaborates with uncertainty. The certainty that comes from the knowledge that what you're doing is what must be done. The reality is that climate change is affecting us here today. Atmospheric rivers, raging wildfires, drought, sterile soil, erosion, it's all happening, and it's all happening here. It's happening here in Oregon. It's happening here in the West. It's happening everywhere. So, let's see what we can do about it. If not us, who then? If not now, when? Thank you.
This is the time in our service when we pause to reflect on the gifts we have received from our abundant earth and the generous spirit of family and community, to consider what it is that we have given and what it is that we are grateful for. During the musical interlude, please consider the gifts that you may have to offer our community, whether it be financial support or the special gift of your time or talent. Know that we are grateful for your offering. And let us remember that love is always the true currency. Join me, please, in our affirmation of gratitude and giving. Let us be grateful when we are able to give, for many do not have that privilege. Let us be grateful for all those who share their gifts with us, for we are enriched by their giving. And let us be grateful even for our needs, so that we may learn from the generosity of others. As we extinguish the chalice, marking the end of our time together, let us resolve to carry within us the warm glow of its flame and all that it stands for as we make our way through the coming week and all that it may bring. And let us meet again in a spirit of peace, love, compassion, and good health.